you guys very, very much. We are continuing today with our series on Proverbs. We have this week and then next week, and we will wrap that up. And then we will go into a series of messages on John chapters 14, 15, 16, and 17. So I would just like to encourage you, if you're not familiar with those chapters, or maybe even if you are familiar with those chapters, start reading ahead. We're going to be spending quite a few weeks in John chapters 14 through 17, as those are the last significant body of teaching that Jesus had before he was arrested and then crucified. And there's so much in there for us to apply to our lives as we look at those words of Jesus. So that starts on September 9th. But next week and then this week, we're going to finish up with this thing about Proverbs. And some of you may have been following along with the blog that I've been doing, and I'll talk a little about Tracy Erickson's been doing that as well. But Proverbs is kind of a neat little thing because it has 31 chapters. And so not all the months have 31 days. What is there, 4 months that have 31 days? 30 days has September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 30. Oh, that's right. So it's actually the other way around. There's 7 months that have 31 days. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Lots of people sort of connected that. So if you read a chapter of Proverbs each day, you can get through the whole book of Proverbs in a month. And so I've been doing that and kind of reading through that. But we decided this summer to take a little bit of time, take 9 weeks, and look at some Proverbs, some selected things in Proverbs, and talk about them. And Proverbs is a book that contains sort of general principles, ideas that are usually true, not necessarily always promises that you can take to the bank, but general principles that if we align our lives with those principles, we will not be disappointed. And I have discovered this time through Proverbs, reading through it a chapter a day, that I have really been drawn to the short little pithy two-line Proverbs, the things that just are just really, really interesting and that paint a picture for me. And I'm not actually going to preach on this one, but I don't know how many of you are familiar with this one. I think the imagery is so good. This is from Proverbs 20. So Monday I read this. Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be filled with gravel. I just imagine sort of munching on this nice piece of homemade bread, like fresh out of the oven, and you just eating that, and then it's just sort of turning to gravel in your mouth and just sort of pebbles falling out. I mean, this is a picture I have of my pebbles sort of falling out, hopefully not teeth, but pebbles falling out of your mouth. And that's the way it really is. You know, it's sweet for a while. It seems so good, but in the end, it's just disaster. And so I've come to appreciate these little one and two line kind of couplets that we have in the in Proverbs, and I've really, really enjoyed that. Next week, we're going to be talking about vomit. So that'll be exciting. Proverbs speaks about vomit. So next week, we'll be talking about that from Proverbs chapter 25. And there's also another proverb that speaks about vomit, but only one during the series we'll talk about. So today, I want to talk to you again. Very short little proverb. There is no hidden meaning in this. There is no great Hebrew exposition of what this says. Most of you have already heard this before, and you already understand this principle. But I just want to remind you, and I think it was led of the Spirit, because I had about half a dozen people after the first service come up to me and say, I just absolutely needed to hear that today. That is exactly what I needed to hear. So I have to tell you, I struggle with this sermon coming up because there's very little Bible, not nearly as much Bible as normal. I don't feel like there's anything particularly revelatory or anything like that in there. But I think that if we would just follow this proverb and the principle that we see in Proverbs 17, 14, and we're going to look at also Proverbs 23, we will be agents of change in the world in which we live. Our lives will change, those around us will change, if we will follow what we read right here. So let's read. Proverbs 17, 14. The beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts. The beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts. And then a companion one that kind of goes along with it is Proverbs 23. It is honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel, right? It is honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel. But the main thing I want to look at is the beginning of strife is like releasing water. So therefore stop the contention before a quarrel starts. Is there anybody, can you think of any situations in your life perhaps where you began a conflict or engaged in a conflict and you kind of thought it would have a fairly limited scope? You kind of felt like it'd just be one push of the send button, one comment on the wall, one Instagram post or one phone conversation, and then it blew up into something you never anticipated it was going to be. This proverb warns us about that. Now, let me say from the beginning, I'm not saying that you should never be involved in a quarrel, or that you should never be involved in a contentious dispute, or it's never appropriate to get engaged in a conversation or to get engaged in a difficult or heated conflict resolution thing. I'm not saying you should always just, you know, turn your back and walk away. But there are many times where we get ourselves in situations where it's like the releasing of water. It goes further than we want it to go. And so we need to just stop and not get involved. And so that's what I want to unpack a little bit this morning. So let's look first, the potential damage. The beginning of strife is like releasing water. Now, I don't know exactly what Solomon had in mind here when he wrote this. I come to the idea of a dam that begins to break or that begins to fail. And you can watch these things on YouTube. I was going to show you one, but there wasn't one that was short enough that I thought it was worthwhile. But you can see it, and you picture it, or maybe you've kind of done stuff like that at home or at the creek near your house when you were a kid, or maybe you still do it, I don't know. But you kind of build a dam and you back up the water, but then all of a sudden there's a weak part. Or maybe you've built a sandcastle and you kind of know what that's like, and you have the moat and everything's really good, and then the tide begins to come in and there's sort of that one wave that kind of breaks over the wall a little bit, and once that little breach starts, then everything starts to pile up and the water goes out and it just gets all messed up. It's just that one little trickle begins a change in the pressure of the dam, and it begins to all of a sudden release. And I did some research, and the earliest known dam that we know of was about 3000 BC in the country of Jordan, or in the area where the country of Jordan now. And so that's the area where we have Palestine. That's the area where things were going. So it's not unlikely that perhaps that was the idea of Solomon's mind. And so I began to think about this in terms of times in my life when this has happened to me, where I didn't really expect it to go in that direction. I didn't really want it to move that way, but it did, right? It went there. It went way further than I ever wanted it to go. And a way we might be able to think of it is this: once the water begins to flow, it is difficult to know how far or fast it will go. Right? Once that argument begins, once that quarrel starts, it's difficult to know how far it's going to go, where it's going to end up. Have you ever on social media, like on Facebook or something, have you ever posted a comment and then it goes in a direction you never anticipated it was going to go? And on your wall, all of a sudden, you've got people you don't even know arguing with each other? You just never thought of it that way. It was just something you wanted to put out there or something you wanted to say, and then all of a sudden, it blows up into something that you never anticipated it was going to blow up into. I'm pretty sure that there wasn't a Facebook back in Solomon's day, but I'm pretty sure that God knew that it was going to happen. And if we take this proverb and we think about it in terms of social media, it expands it into almost immeasurable ways. I don't know how many of you know this name, Justine Sacco, or have heard the story of Justine's life. I'm going to tell you a little bit of the story so you can see how this works. But I would encourage you, if you're really interested, you can just Google this sentence, and it will show up. It's a New York Times article. It will be the first thing on your screen. Anybody know the story of Justine? Okay, some of you do. You and I think listened to the same podcast that talked about this, didn't we? Okay. This woman tweeted something right before she got on an 11-hour flight to Cape Town, South Africa. She tweeted something, and it wasn't really a good thing to tweet, all right? But it wasn't intended in a particularly negative way, but she tweeted this thing, and then she put her phone in airplane mode, like you're supposed to do, and then she got on this plane and landed in Cape Town 11 hours ago. And while she was in the air, her tweet was retweeted and retweeted and retweeted more than 10,000 times. Many people called for her to be fired, which she was, because of her tweets. Some people called for her to be killed, which thankfully she wasn't. And when she got to her destination and she turned on her phone, all of a sudden, things she began to see. She got texts from friends. Hey, where are you? How are you? What's going on? Because she tweeted something she never anticipated what was going to happen. And if you read the article, there's actually a link to another article. There was a man, she only had about 500 followers. So she had very few followers, but there was somebody, I think it was less than 500 even, but somebody who had 15,000 followers or something picked up her tweet and retweeted it. And then that's how it went all throughout the Twittersphere, as we call it, okay? And she actually then invited this man, a couple years later, she invited this man out to lunch to talk, and they actually ended up kind of reconciling, and he actually ended up writing an apology for retweeting the tweet and all the damage that it caused her life. Her life's never the same. She lost her job. It was a mess. And to me, that illustrates this idea that the beginning of strife is like releasing water. You and I just don't know when the water starts to flow where it's ultimately going to go. So there are many times when we should just not do it. We should just not begin the contention. We should just not begin the quarrel. Another way of saying it is that a small breach can lead to a total collapse. And I think most of us have experienced this, right? Most of us have experienced this, either on social media or just in words that we said or an argument that we have with a spouse or a friend or a coworker. It went way farther than we ever anticipated it to go. And Proverbs is written for us, this particular proverb is written for us to consider before we engage in that quarrel, in that conversation, should we really do it? Again, sometimes I think, yes, we have to. But many times we don't. So what I want to look at now is just the solution. Again, there's nothing particularly radical about what we're going to talk about today. But I want you to think about some things that you might use to stop the quarrel before it starts. And these are just strategies that I've used in my own life, sometimes not used them effectively. Maybe you've used them in your life, but just some things to think about. And maybe you've got that particular quarrel, or you're going to face something this week where you could be in that situation, and you might remember some of these things that we talked about. So the first one is simply walk away. Walk away. One of my favorite books on conflict is the book Peacemaker by Ken Sand. And one of the things he talks about in this book is how frequently conflict can be avoided if we just simply walk away. That many of the conflicts that we engage ourselves in, and this is obviously true on social media, but many of the things that we engage ourselves in, we just don't need to do it. We just need to walk away. Tracy Erickson, who attends our first service, she has been blogging along with Proverbs, blogging along with me on her own little blog, working through, I think actually she has a lot better things to say than I've had throughout this particular time. But I asked her if it would be okay if I put a quotation down that she quoted after she's reading through. Now, she's read through Proverbs before in her life, but she took the challenge to read a chapter a day. And this is what she wrote about a week or so ago, I think. She wrote, "One of the things that has stuck out to me this go-round, so this time reading Proverbs, is how many verses refer to not taking offense and stopping quarrels by turning away from them. Essentially, Proverbs says that the wise will stay out of drama by simply keeping their mouth shut and choosing not to get upset." You see this repeated over and over again in the book of Proverbs because it works. Because it's a principle that we should think about and that we should apply in our lives. I was thinking about how this worked in my life about, I don't remember exactly how long ago it was. I think in the first service I said a year ago. It's probably about right. Sometime last summer, I think it was, where I saw something on Facebook and I thought to myself, oh, I need to respond to that. I need to type out a comment. I need to do something with that. And then I began to mow the grass. It takes me about 2.5 hours to mow the grass unless I can rustle up one of the kids to help me, but that usually doesn't happen. So I'm out mowing the grass, and I kind of like mowing the grass too because it's quiet and, you know, you get sort of time by yourself. I have some of it I have to push mow, and then I have a riding mower that I use for some of it. So I kind of enjoy getting out there and mowing the grass. And I spent like the first 30 minutes formulating what it was I was going to say in response to this comment. Right? I spent the first 30 minutes, and by the end of that 30 minutes, I had some pretty good stuff ready to say to that particular person. But I'm not done in 30 minutes. It takes me about 2.5 hours to mow my lawn. So I continued to mow. And you know what? At the end of that 2.5 hours or so, I didn't comment. I didn't even feel the need to comment. I didn't feel the need to respond. I realized, you know what? My response really wasn't particularly going to be all that helpful anyway. And I didn't need to do it. So I just walked away. Now, I kind of forcibly walked away. I didn't really even think about it, but it just happened that way. And I wonder how many times we could stop releasing the water of strife by simply walking. walking away by simply just, I don't need to deal with that. I'm not going to hit send. I'm not going to send that email. I'm going to wait and see if what ends up in my life is still that important and my emotions are still that way. Remember a couple of weeks ago, you probably don't remember, but a couple of weeks ago we talked about the proverb of chapter 15, verse 1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And I asked you, if you're not familiar with this idea, but to think about and think about when you get into conversations or arguments with people, to notice how often the tone of your voice goes what? Higher and louder. And then when the person hears you go louder, they go louder. Or when you hear them go louder, you go louder. And then you go louder, and you go louder, and you go louder. And we end up all the way up here yelling at each other over potato chips or whatever it is that we're, you know, it's just, it goes crazy. And I think that sometimes walking away often allows us to diminish the sound of our response, right? It makes it less contentious. And even if it's a situation where you need to say something, right? Again, because I'm not advocating that there's, you know, conflict can be very helpful sometimes. I mean, I've read a whole book and there's all kinds of science out there about conflict transformation, which I like that word better than conflict resolution, but conflict transformation. So sometimes conflict is healthy. Sometimes conflict is good. Jesus certainly was not afraid to engage people in conflict. But often, initially, the emotion comes up, right? Initially, the limbic system in the brain kicks in. The fight or flight response kicks in. The frontal lobe hasn't had a chance to measure that response yet. And so if we walk away for a little while, even if it's a conflict that we must engage in or should engage in, walking away will allow us to do it in a way, many times, that won't let the water begin to get out, or at least not in as damaging a way as it could be. There are also some times when you can't walk away, take the time to pray. Like sometimes you're in that situation, you're right in the middle of that discussion and you cannot walk away, you have to continue, you have to go on, you have to say something. How do you keep your voice from elevating? Maybe just pray. Under your breath, you know, oh, God, please help me know what to say here. Please help me how to do this so the dam doesn't break, right? So that the water doesn't spill out everywhere. But often, simply, we can just walk away. Maybe you'll face a conflict this week, a situation this week, a comment, a tweet, or whatever, and you could just simply say, I'm going to walk away. I'm going to walk away. Number two, ask the question, am I looking to help or harm? Am I looking to help or harm? Is my involvement in this conflict designed to help or harm? Because any fool can start a quarrel. And be honest with yourself, right? Be honest with yourself. Are you really? And I think I thought back about this when I wrote this sermon a couple weeks ago than as I was reviewing it in my head this week. There have been more times than I want to admit that I really haven't gotten involved to help. I've gotten involved to make a point. Or I've gotten involved to make somebody angry. Or I've gotten involved to make me look good. That's not helping anything. And so if you're not there to help or if you're looking to harm, don't engage. Leave it alone. Just leave it alone. Let God take care of it. Let him work it out. A way of thinking about this too, in addition to this sort of a corollary, is this one. Are you in a position to help if you have a desire to help? I have people in my life for whom my voice is not helpful. We've gotten there. We're at that place. Where my voice, even if my counsel is wise, even if my words would be helpful, they're not going to hear them. Could be my fault in the past. Could just be because of the way life has worked out. But there are folks that I think I might have something positive to say, something helpful to say, something meaningful to say, and I know that if I say it, it won't matter. It will just go the other way. And you probably have people like that in your life too. And you probably even look at some people that way as I think I look at people that way. And so maybe I need to step back and say, you know what, I have a desire to help here. But I should just shut up. I should just stop. Another way of looking at this, and I like to use this word a lot, not everyone will see you as being in a redemptive position. Like having a redemptive conversation with someone, like trying to really bring about a resolution. Sometimes you're just not that person. I'm just not that person. So bow out. Now, if it's really important, you can do a couple things. Number one, you could go to somebody else who may be in a redemptive position with that person and say, hey, next time you talk to him, could you point this out? You got to do that rightly, okay? But that might be something that could be useful, right? Next time you talk to him, maybe he hasn't seen it this way. Could you point this out to him? Could you point this out to her? And maybe they could, because they're in a whole different position in the eyes of that other individual. Or if you just can't think of anything to do that, then go back to number one. Just walk away. Just walk away. Trust that God will figure out a way to reveal your good advice to that other person that you just can't give it to. So walk away. Sometimes we just have to walk away. Sometimes we have to ask ourselves, am I really engaging in this to help or to harm? And this, I have fallen on this one more often than I care to count on Facebook stuff in years past. I've tried to be much better about it now, but I can remember a couple of instances, which I'm not going to tell you, where I made a comment that I know there was no way that was going to be helpful. But I just wanted to zing them. Hopefully no more. Number three, how will my involvement affect others around me? How will my involvement affect others around me? Others who are watching me, others who are listening to me. And again, in the world of social media, this expands to whomever, right? This is especially important when you are a person of, and you're in conflict with someone who is in a different power structure than you are, right? So this is particularly important when people of different positions of power are involved in conflict. When someone you work, who works for you, you're involved in conflict with them. You have to be mindful of this. How will other people view the resolution of your conflict? Even a pastor, congregation, a person in the congregation kind of dynamic, this can happen. There's all kinds of ways in which this can happen in a family. It can happen with older and younger. It can happen with people who are in different positions or power structures in the family. And you're engaged with someone in conflict, and you just need to recognize that it's important not only what happens with this conflict, but it's also important how others perceive what you're doing. Because this next thing I'm going to put up on the screen, this really should be a proverb. I don't claim any inspiration toward this, but if you don't remember anything outside of today, I hope you remember this one, because this actually should be in the Bible somewhere. That's almost blasphemous, isn't it? I shouldn't say that, right? I shouldn't say that. This is really good, though. It is very possible to win the conflict with one person and to also lose the confidence of those who are watching you. You see, when you're in the power position here and they're here, and you squash them like a bug, and maybe they need to be squashed in some regard, but guess what? It's a whole bunch of other people, most of whom are down here on this level, who are watching how you resolve that conflict with him or her. And even though you might be right, and even though it's a conflict, or even though it's something that needed to be said, if you're not conscious of how you say it, and how you resolve it, a whole bunch of other people could be looking and going, yeah, you know, he's right. She's right. But, and then you lose your effectiveness in future times. So it's very possible to win the conflict with one person and also to lose the confidence of those who are watching. So the beginning of conflict, the beginning of strife, is like the releasing of water. It's not something that you and I can get our hands around. Typically, we don't really know where it's going to go. So the prudent thing is to stop it before it even starts. Don't even get it started. We are commanded in Romans 12, this following verse, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. You know, Romans is the greatest theological book in the New Testament. Chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 all have incredible theological things. And then Paul moves away from that in chapters 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 and 16 and begins to give us more application. Right there, he says this. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. And one way to help make that happen is to follow Proverbs 17:14. And many times, stop the confrontation, stop the contention before it even starts. We're going to pray in a minute, and I'm going to ask, the worship team is going to come up and lead us in a couple more songs. And the songs that they've selected today, I think, really fit well. So I just want to preface them. Plus, I'm not even sure they're all in here because this is such a short sermon. Here they come. We're going to sing the song From the Inside Out, and then I Surrender All. And I want you to think about those words as we sing them. And I want you to think, is there a person that you have just this thing where the water just keeps getting released? You know, there's just this confrontation, this contention that just keeps on coming. Maybe you just need to walk away. Maybe you just need to really evaluate your motives in this. And none of us gets it right all the time, right? None of us gets it right all the time. But are you really engaging in this conflict to help, or are you engaging in it to harm? And then, are you cognizant of what's going on in the lives of those who are watching you? Other family members, other employees. And we're trying to resolve that conflict in a way that would be pleasing to God, that would further the testimony of Christ. The only way this really happens is when we let God do it from the inside out. So I'm going to invite you to stand if you are able. And as we sing, maybe you think of that person in your mind maybe this is a sermon that goes to the fact that the water is already running. It's already out there. Maybe it's time to pick up the phone or take a drive and go by and say, "Hey, can we bring this cat and put it back in the bag? Can we stop the bleeding? Can we stop the releasing of water? And then what do we do to try to make sure it doesn't happen again?" Maybe there's a person that's already in your mind that you know, I need to do that. Or maybe as you go through this week, you're going to have that temptation to do that quarrel, that this proverb is going to come back into your head. And you're able to say, "Oh, thank you, Jesus, for helping me in that." Are you willing to surrender that to God this morning? So if you're able to, please stand as we sing. And if you'd like to pray, we'll have folks up here to pray with you this morning.